Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The elves had noticed that every so often, all the dragons in the world would go berserk and lose all semblance of self-control, often turning on one another and just kind of descending into madness.
Is this a blood moon or something?
Oh, man, Jamie, out of nowhere. Calling it. Come on, sake, dude. Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast, The Lore Boys. Today's episode, we're going to be returning to the Forgotten Realms setting of Dungeons & Dragons and taking a look at one of the most iconic villains from the world's best-selling tabletop RPG, Tiamat. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer. With me, as always, is James and Peter. Hi, hello. James and Peter.
Hello.
I'm the green head because I'm wearing green.
Yeah, Jamie, what color are you?
The white head.
You just smeared white Vaseline all over your face. Jamie's in white face for this episode.
I was gonna say red. I was gonna say red for the red beard, but I guess we could just go by the color of my skin.
That's how I
no,
judge
it's the
you.
Color of the cream.
The content of your character means nothing to me.
Yeah, I get a dry face. I got to put a lot of Vaseline on it.
Okay. And I will be just a human wizard. I'm not even ahead of Tiamat. Yeah.
That's an option.
It's right. My normal self. Yeah. Thanks for all. Thanks for listening, I guess, to everyone who is listening right now. Thanks also to our patrons, all of you. But I guess a special shout out is deserving of our two newest patrons, who Pete is pulling up their names as I'm looking at them.
Yep, we've got Bjorn and Infinite Journeys. Cool. I like that Bjorn subscribed with $6 New Zealand, so I don't know if that's more or less, but thank you, or fuck you, depending on the exchange rate.
every time somebody like pays in not USD, we get the amount in the not USD, and it's sometimes it's just like the weird, like I know Canadian is always $4.50 for the $3 tier, but it's cool to see like the different exchange rates apply different amounts.
Welcome and thank you, guys.
Welcome. Thanks. If you guys are interested in supporting the show and helping us keep the the lights on for all this podcasting we do have a link to our Patreon in the description of this episode, or you can go to patreon.com/theloreboys, where we have a couple different tiers that you can check out if you're interested. But more on that at the end of the episode. Let's talk about some lore, huh?
Yeah.
You guys want
actually to? I know Tiamat just through. Because gamers game, dude, and Tiamat's got to show up somewhere.
Let's
start with what you guys know about Tiamat, I guess. James, you want to go first?
So, I don't remember what lore this is from, but I remember when, like, a bunch of dragons all end up in one place and get all angry, then, like, Tiamat can just form out of all of them. And, like, it's just, like, the uber dragon with every single colored head, and it's like one of the strongest fantasy creatures I can think of.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. That's about as much as I know. And it shows up, Tiamat will show up in like a bunch of other stuff. Like I think it's a summon in Final Fantasy. I think it
could be.
Yeah. It ends up in a lot of other fantasy stuff because it's such a cool character.
Pete, what do you know?
Huh? I think the name is from the Old Testament, which why the Final Fantasy VII summon would make sense, because a lot of those names are from the Old Testament. And I've seen the figurine at the hobby shop I was going to during the pandemic when I was briefly infatuated with painting Warhammer 40K. And I know there's a Tiamat figurine that was unpainted, gigantic, five-headed dragon,
I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like the queen.
You know, five-headed because you know what five colors the heads are. Because last week we talked about Dragonlance lore. We did a lot of talking about dragons. This week we're talking about Forgotten Realms / Faerun. Which is just another world, not the Dragonlance setting. This is, I guess, the de facto, or in a lot of cases, the default D&D setting. Like, this is the Sword Coast and kind of the Waterdeep, Baldur's Gate, all that stuff happens in Faerun, I guess. Yeah. But the rules for dragons are generally the same.
So, what, five heads, that five doesn't heads. Take it. It's, that's all the colors, and that's all the metals.
It's just Roy GB. It doesn't go all the way to Biv.
Is there like a metal Tiamat that has all like the gold, the bronze, the silver, the...
There is not a five-headed metallic dragon. There is a platinum dragon that leads, that is the god of metallic dragons, whom we'll talk a little bit about as well. This was almost like the episode of Tiamat and Bahamut, who is the platinum dragon.
the other summon from the Bible.
And then, which is a big-ass metal dragon now that I remember pointing that out. Yeah, okay, yeah.
I was gonna do both of them, but it felt too clustered, so I did a couple of revisions on this episode. Had to go back through it a few times just because of I used a lot of sources. I used as many as I could, obviously, as always. You know, there's stuff from second edition, which we're gonna kind of start with, and then there's stuff published as recently as like 2019. And like, there's a lot of overlap, and there's a little bit of Lore Boys canon that we're going to inject, and a lot like the Lore Boys canon is typically just reading between the lines of like some of the assumptions made, but
or you googled wrong and just want to fill space.
I mean, not googled wrong. It's all primary sources, so I used all PDFs and
you do good research, man.
I do. I enjoy the research of especially like D&D and like Elder Scrolls and Magic and stuff like that. Like, I enjoy reading the story, so I don't mind doing it at all. And like, for me, who plays a lot of D&D and does a lot of like tabletop games and loves to DM, like, I love the world building aspects of it. So these are like my favorite parts of those games, really. So I don't mind it at all. It takes time is my main problem.
Yeah, I usually like experiencing whatever the subject is myself, and then I'll go for a secondary source, someone who
me too,
is willing to explain it all to me, and I don't have to read as much. But
that's what hopefully this show is.
Audiobook, definitely my favorite way to put something. Or don't rewatch Evangelion. And to address the controversy, Shinji does not jack off to his mom's clone. It's a different unconscious 14-year-old. I'm sorry, I got that wrong.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't remember that at all. But sure. Okay, so we're gonna start. We're gonna start with Tiamat. We're gonna start, I guess, with just a description of Tiamat. After that, we'll jump into kind of the creation myth. Excuse me. I've been doing that a lot recently. I don't know if I'm having a stroke. I mean, I got like 4 hours of sleep last night. But creation myth for dragons in the world of Forgotten Realms. So important distinction that I already mentioned last episode on Dragonlance, another universe. The dragons essentially work the same, where metallic dragons are the good aligned dragons, chromatic dragons, so being the colors, so red, blue, black, green, and white are the evil dragons, largely unchanged from Dragonlance. So I'm not gonna talk about that too much, I guess.
I don't know why, but I always felt it was the opposite. Even though you probably told us last time we talked about it a lot
last week. We talked about how the green dragons were the mustard gas dragons.
The war crime dragons.
Right, yeah, and the red ones were super snooty and above everyone else. I thought that they were... Okay, I thought that was all just jokes and stuff. Okay, cool. No, color's bad.
In Dragonlance lore, you remember from last week, it was the good god and the evil goddess created all the dragons, and then the evil goddess corrupted them. The good god mourned them and had the creation god make statues, which he gave life. Like, he had them make the god statues. That's the Dragonlance lore, and that's, I feel like, an easier way to remember is that trick which turned the chromatic dragons evil. And so, like, the good ones are good statues of those.
Cool.
But, like, color and then metal is nature versus technology. So, like, the good and evil in that order does kind of, like, in a pinch, kind of stand to reason in your head. But anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to start with a quote, because you guys love quotes. This one's from Carl Sargent's Monster Mythology from the second edition Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. So 80s is where we are. Avaricious, supremely vain, and profoundly lawful evil. Tiamat proclaims herself the creator of all of evil dragonkind, and certainly many evil dragons revere her as their creator and patron deity. She infests the uppermost of the nine hells with her consorts, each a great worm of different color, one red, one white, one green, one blue, and one black. Whether or not Tiamat is truly the creator of all evil dragons is a subtle question. As Io contains all alignments, evil is born from within her, and in this sense, Tiamat is not a prime creator. However, She may have been, in some sense, a midwife of the coming of evil dragons into the world, as Bahamut is often seen as the force who drew good dragons from Io's being. She keeps an active and eager watch over evil dragon kind and ever stirs them to further avarice, pride, and wickedness. She herself is hateful, spiteful, never forgetting any kind of slight, and she enjoys such wretched pastimes as torture, bickering, and fighting among her consorts, as well as destroying valuables and treasures which her avatars bring to her, sometimes as offerings from mortal evil dragons. So I know that was a heavy one up front, already naming some fun fantasy names and things like that. Kind of what we've already said, Tiamat is the goddess of evil chromatic dragons, specifically the evil ones. She's five-headed with a head for each chromatic color, right?
Right, right, yeah.
In opposition to her, again, what we've already covered, in the lore is Bahamut, the platinum dragon deity of law and justice.
Okay.
What, Ethan, do you know what I'm talking about whenever too many dragons get it into one place? And then
that is Malazan, and you're thinking
of Tiam?
Yeah, Tiam, who's based on Tiamat. And who is opposed by Korobas, the Ototaro dragon.
Yeah, you gotta keep your dragons separated, or else an evil dragon god will just deform. Exactly. Yeah,
it's like the gremlins.
it's like a rat king, right? All their tails get stuck together. So Tiamat and Bahamut, some real world mythology for you guys. Tiamat is the Mesopotamian primordial goddess of the sea. She is the chaos of primordial creation and referred to as the Glistening One. She is often described as monstrous, an embodiment of primordial chaos, often identifying her with images of a sea serpent or dragon. So in real Mesopotamian lore, she's chaotic, which is kind of true for Tiamat as well, and often depicted as a dragon. Alternately, Arabian mythology has the figure Bahamut, who is a giant fish who lives in the sea and holds the world on their back. Or, more accurately, they hold an ox, which holds a slab of solid gemstone, which holds an angel, which holds the world on their back.
I see. Okay.
Muhammad is essentially a giant fish at the bottom of this kind of human ladder of an ox, a slab of gemstone, an angel, and then the world at the top.
The cheerleaders that hold up the world, basically.
Yeah. I want to say we
Arabian
talked about
Jenga. You got to pull the ox out from under the angel.
Arabian Jenga and Arabian Yahtzee. So I think we talked about on the Pokemon episode Bahamut, actually, because it's the root of the word behemoth. And so that's
Groudon would be the behemoth in that story, right? It's a land beast. Because Kyogre, the sea beast, is Leviathan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so Bahamut's a giant fish. That's why in my head I was like, it's Kyogre, but we definitely talked about it in, we talked about Bahamut myth.
Do we know what kind of fish? Is he like a grouper? Is he like a catfish?
I saw one picture of him, which
flounder
was like,
would be good because he's flat. You could really get a pyramid on top of that thing.
He's from ancient Arabia, so he's like a fish that a fourth grader drew. You know what I mean? It's not.
They didn't live long in an ancient Arabia. Is that what you're saying? I don't know.
It's like the desert.
So I'm saying art perspectives in ancient Arabia weren't necessarily where they are in Da Vinci's time. So we're not going to be able to tell necessarily what fish was hastily painted on this clay fired urn, right?
Yeah, got it.
The ancient Assyrians didn't have a proper judge of perspective or our cubism or anything like that.
I mean, the world didn't have a proper view, grasp on perspective for another 1,000 years. So.
1,000 years, yeah. Yeah, the guy with the pointy stick wasn't experimenting with color at this point.
Yeah.
There's a guy just looking through a hollow branch, trying to figure out the rule of thirds.
Little caveman DOP for the cave painting.
has an actual Nautilus shell for the golden ratio.
Just press it up against things.
Okay, so we kind of talked about Io in that quote from the monster mythology being the progenitor of all of dragonkind. There's a couple different dragon creation myths in the canon. And I talk about this all the time, so we won't dwell on it too much, but I love the ones in Elder Scrolls and in D&D where it's unclear because they're creation myths and everyone kind of has their own take on it and it's what they believe, and there's no sense in enshrining one as canon. But so Tiamat's origins specifically are not cut and dry. There's conflicting accounts. There's some straight up contradiction, depending who you ask. Some say Tiamat, Bahamut, and the dragon god of death, Null, were the children of Asgarath, or Io. In the quote that I just read you guys, Io is also known as Asgarath. Cool. You guys, I'm not seeing any sparks of recognition, which is good, because Io is the...
is a rune in Diablo 2.
True.
Yeah.
Never mind, there was a spark of recognition, and it was dumber than the one that I was worried about you having, so that's good.
I was thinking the moon of Jupiter, and I was like, it's a volcano. That's a cool place to like breed dragons, right?
Yeah. No, you guys will remember our very first D&D episode. We talked about somebody named Ao, whom we reference as Steve Aoki, who was essentially the first god of...
He threw a cake in the face. I'm sure we made this joke already.
Yeah, we did.
Got it.
So yeah, we did 6 years ago or whatever. So, or 7 years ago almost now. So you don't need to worry about it too much.
19th episode from 2017.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. D&D. So we talked about Ao being the progenitor god who created the universe. Essentially, Io is like the dragon parallel to that, but they are not the same being.
Okay.
So the dragons do have their own like created all things person, but not Ao.
And who's Null again?
Null is the dragon god of death. Who we'll talk a bit about later, but don't focus too much. I'm giving you guys, I guess, some of the very short potential like kickoffs for dragons in Forgotten Realms.
That's cool. Zero, god of death. Everything has to like equal nothing, you know? Like
We'll talk about them a bit later, but they have like two forms too, where they're like they're essentially like the ferryman, Karen.
They're
both Karen, and then they're also like more of like a Kratos, like an Ares, like a god who delivers death as well. They kind of have two aspects.
Imagine running like the River Styx racket of like killing and transporting your own souls?
Right?
Bullshit.
True.
Business is booming. Right?
Yeah, exactly. That's some Sopranos shit right there. We're talking about that on the bonus.
So another creation myth, the ancient draconic myth Elegy for the First World, contends that Bahamut and Tiamat simply coalesced from the primordial chaos at the beginning of time. It's the most boring possible, the most boring of these potential creation myths, so just disregard that one. The Dragonborn, whom we'll talk about who the Dragonborn are towards the end of this episode, but the Dragonborn, which is a playable humanoid race of like dragon people, essentially, they believe that Bahamut and Tiamat were born from the sundered corpse of Asgarath when the god of creation was killed in the Dawn War. It's said that Asgarath, in her hubris, tried to face alone the primordial Eric Hus. The Dawn War, which we have talked about on an episode of D&D, again, it was a million years ago. Essentially, it's like the gods and the primordials at the dawn of time. I don't know if you guys remember this, but Ibir Toril was the name of the planet. At the end of the Dawn War, they split the planet into two, Ibir and Toril, where Ibir they gave to the gods gave to the primordials, and Toril the gods kept for themselves, essentially, because they just couldn't stop fighting with each other.
That's ringing a bell.
But like Toril is definitely a word that was already in my head when you just said it, and I was like, yeah, nothing else.
So
before you mentioning the Dragonborn got me into thinking, like, in the Shrek universe, is there like a dragon centaur where it's like the bottom half of a donkey and then the top half of like a dragon?
Or, I mean, yeah, or vice canonically, versa. Donkey has kids, doesn't he?
Yeah, and they have like little donkey heads and little dragonite wings, basically.
Right. Yeah. It's probably like mules, though, where they can't make another one afterwards.
Lore Boys canon. Yes. Lore Boys canon. Donkey and dragon's children are sterile. That is the end of his bloodline.
Okay.
So the kingdom of Donkey will descend into ruin after one of his children gets syphilis and goes mad.
Well, this is how donkeys work. They get one. They could breed with anything, but they just get one, you know? And then they don't get to keep going after that unless they breed with their own kind. Yeah. And donkeys just get one.
All right. Okay, so the Dawn War at the beginning of time, we have gods fighting against primordials. Asgarath, this dragon god of creation, takes on the primordial Eric Hus. Eric Hus, also known as the King of Terror, not exactly to be fucked with. hefting his adamantine axe, Eric Hus cleft Asgarath clean in twain. It's from these two halves that Tiamat and Bahamut are said to have risen. So he essentially cuts her in half and like the one he cuts them he cuts Asgrath perfectly along the good and evil line.
Yeah,
that we all have inside of us, right?
I was going to say that. Yes,
the evil side rises as Tiamat, and the good side rises as Bahamut. That's the Dragonborn interpretation of the.
It's the right hand, left hand thing, right? Like,
and yes, Ambi and Sinestro, or Dextrose and Sinestros. Yeah.
Yes,
that's very cool. Yeah.
So, in another source, Nigel Finley et al.'s Draconomicon. The dragons were created after Asgarath cast down a primordial god known as Zotha. The only mention of Zotha in anything I could find was this one source where they just mentioned him being cast down, essentially. Okay. Asgarath, more commonly called Io in the Outer Planes, is the dragon deity of creation, as I kind of said, is regarded as the progenitor of both the multiverse and dragonkind. So whereas Ao was said to have created the universe, Io somehow has created the multiverse, I guess, and like parallel dimensions and all like different planes and things like that. So I have a longer quote from you guys from the Draconomicon, which kind of explains this second or this final creation myth.
What was the author's name again? Sorry.
Nigel Finley, yeah.
Nigel Finley is such a fucking D&D author ass name. It's unbelievable.
I pictured Nigel Thornberry as soon as he said it.
Just like, wow.
The world was still flat here before the beginning of time.
Still?
Before Asgarath, the world shaper folded the cloth of existence into its final form. The world was flat, and above it hung the crystal sun that Zotha had wrought before Asgarath cast him down. Asgarath soared above the world and looked down upon it, and she saw that it was good. And so Asgarath bent her form around the crystal sun and touched her breath to it. And the crystal sun burst into fragments that pierced the flesh of Asgarath, and her blood fell on the world. Where the drops fell, the powers of the world and the powers of the crystal sun came together, and the spawn of Asgarath came forth upon the face of the world. Red they were. Red that would later depart from its purity. But here, before the beginning of time, their red was the pure red of the shattered crystal sun. They spread their wings and took to the skies, circling around the still, cold form of Asgarath. One after another, score upon score, they bent their breath against the body of Asgarath, and the skies rang with their lamentations. Only one of the spawn of Asgarath withheld his breath. Instead, he pulled a shard from the crystal sun from the flesh of Asgarath and used it to draw blood from his own flesh, and this blood fell upon the face of the world. As before, there was movement where the blood fell, but the creatures that came forth from this blood were not of the pure red. Colored like the products of the world they were, like the unliving metals. And the renegade raised his voice, and his voice was a trumpet. I too have created. The form of Asgarath began to stir, as the renegade knew it must. The renegade spread his wings and flew, and the spawn of the renegade followed him into the farthest reaches of the world. So again, okay. A lot to unpack there.
Well, first of all, Asgarath, crazy move.
Yeah, wow, right?
What? You fold myself around a sun and explode it with my breath.
I swear to God, I really don't want to do this on every episode. I say that, and then I also always do creation myths. But like, I love this bullshit because that's written exactly like a real world creation myth, where it's just like, yeah. Oh yeah, this person just like went forth and like decided to die one day.
Yeah, and renegade photocopy of a photocopy never works. I saw that clone movie. So yeah, you can't do that.
Is this red dragon that I'm assuming red dragon, the pure blood dragon, is this Thembershode? Is he a part of this at all?
I don't know who Thembershode is, so you're gonna have to explain to me and the listeners who that is.
I like that name.
It sounds like you're the name for your sleep paralysis demon or something. Like,
yeah,
oh, is Thembershode gonna be in this episode?
I think it's a fun French name for your Charmander.
Thembershode. Yeah. No, it's because now that the movie's out, I can talk about it. It's in theaters. The dragon in the trailers for the D&D movie that just came out is Thembershode, and I know I googled it at some point, and like in the lore, he's one of the he's like the primary red dragon.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Running hot.
No, it's not him. Father of Flame, the ever burning in the Foundry's heart. This is not him.
Okay, so big god goes around the sun, explodes the sun, the blood creates
the crystal sun, the crystal sun specifically, because it's not the normal sun. It's this second crystal sun that this god Zotha was said to have built in the sky, and we're gonna get into what this crystal sun was.
Okay. And do we know at the first level is angels or
no,
what are we
it's
calling
dragons?
Them?
It's chromatic dragons. So chromatic dragon. This says red. Red they were. Red that would later depart from its purity.
Right.
But here, before the beginning of time, the red was the pure red of the shattered crystal sun. So this red dragon comes. Now, it's so, yeah, this crystal sun slays Asgarath, from his blood and body rise dragons.
Right.
Chromatic dragon specifically.
Okay.
In the fiction, so in the Draconomicon is a real book that you can buy. This is a quote of a fictional book within that book. Very okay. Elder Scrolls again, right?
Yeah.
That fictional book is called The Book of the World. So in the fiction, it said that this book was found in a land known as Azram and was written in a language called Thoras. So in the original Thoras language,
and we saw Thor's ass in the movie. Even
I like how this real book you can buy about fake things has a fake book about fake things, and there's a like a fake Rosetta Stone as well.
Yeah.
Like within,
yeah.
Well, very so cool. In the original Thoras script, it said that breath that like because his blood fell from him, Asgrass Asgrass mm-hmm. blood fell from her, and it creates these red dragons. They rise from the blood, right? And it said that they start to breathe their like breath weapons essentially against the body. In the original Thoras, that breath is like pluralized. It's like a collective noun in a way that implies multiple breaths from a single dragon, like a five-headed dragon, maybe.
Okay.
So it's kind of implied that Tiamat was the first to rise from his blood.
I just realized that now with Twitch culture, five-headed dragon also means a very smart dragon.
The internet is a disease, dude. You're sick.
It is.
Yeah, you're sick, baby.
No, it really is. There is. I forget the name.
200 IQ five-headed dragon plays, is that what you're getting at?
No, like there was like an earthquake in Chad or something, and it's like Chad earthquake wrecks the whole city, and everyone's just thinking, yeah, what a Chad earthquake.
Unplug your Ethernet right now, guys.
Yeah. Brains are poison. Yeah, okay.
So there's an implication that the Tiamat was the first to rise from his breath. What I said, what the quote says after that is there was one who essentially refuses to breathe his breath on the corpse of Asgrath, instead grabs a crystal, a shard of the crystal sun, makes himself bleed, and where that blood falls, the corrupted dragons, like the unliving metals of the world, so metallic dragons is what can be implied there. And this one is called the Renegade, and the metallic dragons are called the spawn of the Renegade. The Thoras word for renegade is Bahamut. Right?
So, I didn't expect them to be the good guys because they're the photocopy of the photocopy, but
it's a good album too.
Yeah.
it's like it's interesting how I like to think of it as this like act of violence which killed Asgarath, led to the evil ones, because it's like the violence itself that created those drops of blood. And we'll talk about something called Tearfall, or the Month of Mists, or the Seven Turn Winter, which is probably what this event, that this fable, this myth, whatever, is referring to. This like actual event, I guess. So of the crystal sun shattering and crashing down to the earth, it's probably Tearfall that they're speaking of. Also called the Month of Mists or the Seven Turn Winter. This is where a comet collides with the world. So another quote for you guys. This one's from the Forgotten Realms campaign guide by Cordell Greenwood and Sims. In the final days of the Batraki civilization, circa negative 31,000 DR, so 31,000 BC,
okay,
an unimaginable catastrophe struck Toril. It is said that the amphibioids were waging a losing war against the Titan armies of Anam's brood. In their desperation, the Batraki performed an epic ritual of summoning that released several primordials from their imprisonment. The gods quickly moved against their ancient foes, resulting in terrible earthquakes, fires, and windstorms that swept across the planet. During the tumult, a primordial calling herself Asgaroth the World Shaper even hurled an ice moon at Toril, intent on destroying the world she couldn't claim as her own. Yet before the world was torn completely asunder, the Hidden One intervened. Lord Ao, the first god, created a twin of the planet, granting the primordials dominion over the new world of Abir and the gods' control over the original world of Toril. Okay. Ancient Saruk accounts remark on the changing of the stars, but until the spell plague and the return of Abir, very few paid these legends any heed.
These primordials are just like children, dude. It's like, you get your own planet, Just don't mess with things. Like, yeah, it's fine.
This is as complicated as actual religious texts. And I did want to comment, if our sacred texts here on Earth had amphibioids in them, I would be a way more spiritual man.
Yeah.
I'm doing Ramadan for the amphibioids, dude. Like, I'm converting now.
Jesus was a merfolk. He gets us.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought we'd be against them. Like, on the Crusades, we'd be slaying frog people.
Yeah, reclaim the Holy Land from the amphibians.
Yeah, exactly. Just like full-on paladins just fighting frog people. Yeah. That sounds like, honestly, the beginning of a human paladin in World of Warcraft. But yeah.
So, I mean, so this references a primordial name, Asgaroth. Not Asgarath, who's the dragon that we know, but the World Shaper kind of implies it's the same thing. I'm inclined to believe it's the same person. Also, like, one of the other creation myths that we heard, where Eric Hus, the primordial, like, cut Asgarath in half. Eric Hus was the primordial, but in this account, Asgarath is listed as a primordial who does hurl this moon at the Earth, right? Okay. Essentially, this comet at the Earth. So, like you say, Pete, it's like pretty contradictory, like just like real religious texts. Like, this is Hebrew and Christianity, like Judaism and Christianity, essentially, or Islam and Christianity, where it's just like the same source material, but they're like taking it completely different ways, basically exact opposite ways, right?
Yeah, well, we all have the amphibioid monomyth, right?
That's, I was gonna say
the Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all like branched off of.
I can't read this frog scratch, man. It's just so messed up. Yeah, dragons and like scratching into tablets,
the frog sea scrolls.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's got all that like the egg slime on it that they pull it out. It's like a pond.
Oh god, yeah.
So this event, the Tearfall, it's this something called the Tear of Saloon, or this crystal moon, this crystal sun. It seems like, however, Asgarath was involved, it does crash to the Earth. Asgarath in this account doesn't get wounded by it, but in the dragon account, I guess she does via the Draconomicon. Regardless of how dragons got here, they do arrive in the Forgotten Realms eventually, and they kind of start making themselves at home, right? So I guess our next sort of phase here is the Time of Giants. Cool. So in the centuries that follow their arrival, and it's so I mean, again, contradictory accounts, but I thought it was super interesting when researching this, like some officially published D&D source material. This is all officially published, like licensed source material, right? But some of it is like, oh, the dragons in this time are actually proto dragons. They weren't true dragons. They were all smaller. And like true dragons are younger than like humans, essentially, which I thought was like a really interesting, like that's like super uncommon that you would get that. But it doesn't actually line up with like... Assume we're talking about proto dragons. If you want to choose that canon for yourself, all the canon is obviously pretty kind of choose as you go. It's a choose your own adventure game in a lot of ways, right? But this is like way before any published campaign settings really take place. This is all like prehistory to it. So like when the dragons are getting set up on the plane, it is no matter if they're dragons or proto dragons. Giants are set up. Giants do have an empire that essentially spans the world, at least the continent of Faerun. And that empire is called Astoria. So,
cool.
Dragons and giants do not get along in D&D. No, they kind of hate each other.
We had like giants in our Earth's past. Is that when the dragons were around too, I guess? Like we had,
we have giants in Earth's past.
Megafauna, man. We had like bears that are like two stories tall. We had, I mean, giant cave sloths.
The largest creature to have ever lived is alive.
Is a blue whale now. I did see that. I saw a megafauna with all the weights on Reddit, and the blue whale is the biggest, but that's in the water. Imagine. Like a two-story bear running at you full force, man. Holy,
I do kind of miss, like, I wish I could go back and just see what it would look like. Like, can you imagine, like, we've talked about the titanosaurs or whatever. Can you imagine seeing an animal that's, like, 70 feet tall? That's crazy. Can you imagine seeing an animal moving in herds? They move in herds. I can't believe it.
Yeah. And so they were all around until the dragons came. Yeah, the dinosaurs and the megafauna knocked each other out.
Yeah.
And then here we are today. Yeah.
Yeah, so we've got giants that they're set up in their Empire of Astoria, and these dragons are kind of like getting set up as a species, I guess you'd say. There's small border clashes between a lot of them where like giants kind of have, or sorry, dragons have lairs and they have like kind of domains.
What,
where
like an onion?
Yeah, exactly, like Shrek.
Lairs, I got it.
That's what attracted Donkey to the dragon, is that yeah. They all, no, like, it, Donkey was actually attracted to Shrek, but Shrek didn't reciprocate, yeah. So he found somebody else with layers.
Well, if you read The Hobbit, Smaug is like, on top of a giant pile of onions, like, in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got, and it's encrusted itself into his flesh to protect him from arrows, but there's
get
one
out
onion
of my onion Smaug. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been to a dragon lair in video game. I went to Anixia's lair, there's a lot of whelps, left side, you might have heard. Yeah.
And they have, so they have like domains essentially, right? Where they're like miles across that like dragons tend, even the ones that tend to cooperate or like travel in packs or whatever, they still kind of are solitary creatures where like they, one dragon would have like a several square mile area that's like its, and this starts to kind of brush up against a lot of like giant cities essentially.
Are they like tigers basically? They're like rubbing on trees or whatever, and then a giant comes by and he's just like, oh, there's different piss on this tree. We need to start a war.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure who the giants are in this metaphor, or the giants other tigers.
I guess so.
I think it's, yeah. I'm giants on. Are more like set up. They're walking around with masks on the back of their head to stop dragon attacks, basically.
Okay. What are giants? Like, is it Skyrim-like giants? Is it like primordial-type giants of elements? Is it like...
Yeah, so they're giants of elements. There's frost giants, fire giants, cloud giants, storm giants, stone giants, and hill giants. And there is a hierarchy called the Ordning, which
the hill giants got kind of ripped off there. You can be a storm giant. This guy got a hill.
So I love that. I love that.
Exaggerate. It's the mountain of the molehill giants, right?
Yeah.
The Ordning, as determined by Anam the Allfather, is storm giants are at the top, hill giants are at the bottom. So there's a caste. There's a caste system to giants. Hill giants are like in D&D when you're playing, they're like the easiest ones to beat. They're the ones that you'll like, if you're fighting the giants, they're the ones that you'll kind of come up against first. And they're relatively shorter. They're like 12 to 14 feet tall, whereas storm giants are like 24 to 26 feet tall. Okay. Right.
Wow.
Are the hill giants the kind of classic Unga Bunga giant? Like use club.
Exactly.
Use club, eat fair maiden sort of guys.
Yeah. Stupider, less organized, weaker, smaller, all that stuff.
Not a lot of flooding in their houses, though, because they stay on hills. So it's good.
Oh, less bugs, you know, nice cross trees.
Yeah. The storm giants can't rain on their parade as bad as they could if they stayed in the valley giants.
They are more prone to lightning strikes, I think, on top of the hill.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. And they're pretty tall, yeah.
storm giants are very, like, very refined, very civilized. They have, like, I didn't write any of this down. I only know it because I've played through the Storm King's Thunder campaign as a player. So I learned all this in a campaign, essentially.
Cool.
The astute listener will be like, Anam, the Allfather, wasn't that who the amphiboids were losing to? And yeah, it was the Storm Giants kind of taking over when the amphiboids summoned a crystal sun from the sky to crash into the... essentially performed an epic ritual, which released the primordials, which ended up in the... with the primordial Azeroth casting a crystal sun down at the earth. So like maybe that is again, you know, a mistelling of history where was Azeroth just trying to fuck up some giants because Azeroth is a dragon. We don't know, obviously, but the lore can be whatever you want.
Cool.
But yeah, we have these kind of mounting clashes, not all at war yet until one thing happens, which kicks off something called the Thousand Year War.
Which is actually only 14 years.
Yeah, exactly. I have an excerpt for you guys from Volo's Guide to Monsters, which just for reference, like the last couple sources, the Forgotten Realms campaign book was like mid-2000s. Before that, we're talking like 80s stuff. Now we're in like 2015 or 2016, I think was when Volo's was published. So it is, while not perfectly consistent, surprisingly consistent. Anyway, I got a quote for you guys. Dragons had lived in and around Astoria in relative peace since the Empire's foundation. Conflicts between dragons and giants in those days were personal, not tribal or regional, and usually involved bragging rights or hunting territory. Differences were settled by individual contests of might, wits, or skill. That situation persisted for generations, until the red dragon Garrix, inflamed by the greed and envy in its followers by railing against the giants' prosperity, and they rose up in response. At least, that's what most giants believe to have happened. No one really knows any longer what set off the war. But once battle began, the longstanding peace between giants and dragons crumbled everywhere. Foes tore at each other's throats in all parts of Astoria. There were no front lines or safe havens, only endless ambushes, sieges, and atrocities committed against giants and dragons alike. Eventually, none were left alive on either side who had seen the war's beginning. Age and brutality had claimed them all, and the few giants and dragons then alive had spent their entire existence at war. The thousand-year war didn't truly end so much as it wasted away through attrition and exhaustion.
Shoot. So, this is- I like how it started, by the way. I like how it started, but it's all personal, and sometimes it's just for bragging rights.
Yep.
Like a dragon and a giant in an arm wrestling competition or something.
Straight up. It's chess. It's Luigi playing chess with death table next to a giant and a dragon playing chess, right?
Yeah. And then eventually it gets to just a bloodbath. And honestly, just from hearing dragons versus giants, dragons should win like every time easily. But maybe I'm overpowering dragons versus giants because they can fly and just burn them.
Dragons, giants use tools, though. Like, you can imagine, like, in my head, like, instead of a trebuchet, you've got a dragon with just, like, the sickest fucking, like, David versus Goliath sling.
Oh,
yeah.
Hucking rocks at dragons.
That's true, actually. That'd
be straight cool. up, every giant has a move in the mechanics of the game, which is they stick their hands into the ground, pull out a big rock, and throw it, essentially.
So
giant has a ranged attack, essentially.
Oh, that's the Dark Souls does that. Harry Potter giants do that in the game. Yeah. All these. Yeah, okay.
So that's so cool. You're not wrong that individual dragons are much more powerful than an individual giant, but it's kind of what I said before, where like one dragon has this like mile, like square miles, like huge, many acres that it kind of rules over, and it's butting up against a giant city. So it's kind of also its numbers. It is technological advantage, like Pete says. This war is essentially when you're playing again, you don't typically like no published campaigns are really set this far in the past. They're usually like 30,000 years into the future, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm also thinking of the size of a crossbow that that a giant could pull back.
Well, exactly, that's also Dark Souls. Like Goth, it's like a dragon hunter, and even when he's blind, he can shoot down that one in the DLC. Insane.
Exactly. Yeah, cool. This is kind of the prehistory explanation of like why giants and dragons aren't like super common. Is this thousand year war where they essentially like wiped each other out almost completely, and they live like much longer, so much slower lives. You know, they don't necessarily reproduce as fast, and there's just like that's why you're not like constantly bumping up against giants. The Storm King's Thunder campaign, I guess spoilers for that campaign if anyone's playing it, but like the whole conceit of it is that the Ordning, which is the caste system for giants, so like the Storm Giants at the top essentially is thrown into disarray when the king of the Storm Giants just goes missing one day. And the entire campaign kind of revolves around like, hey, the Ordning has fallen into disarray, so they're all kind of vying to be the new top giant cast. And, and that conflict,
hill giants trying to get to the top. Imagine those idiots.
ain't no hill giant top G. Not
I'm gonna be king of the giants.
Dragon his knuckles all the way there.
Yeah. Dragon his knuckles, dude. Never.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say anything offensive.
Yeah. No. the entire conceit of the campaign is like those conflicts of like trying to be the top dog, essentially, or the top giant, is like spilling out into regular civilization of these like kind of pocket groups of giants. Cool. So it was Tiamat and the dragon god Garrix, whom I mentioned in that last quote.
He was a red boy.
Garrix was I believe a red giant. Yeah. Also like it's Gary Gygax. Probably named after him. I didn't get any kind of confirmation. I didn't look at it all. I saw the name. I was like, probably named after Gary Gygax.
Giant or dragon? I thought he was a dragon. Garrix is a dragon. Okay.
Garrix is a dragon. It was Tiamat and the dragon god Garrix leading the war against Astoria. So by the end of it, Tiamat and Garrix are kind of like the main generals fighting against the giants. Tiamat, at the end of the war, kind of signaling the end of the war, becomes cursed and is banished to Avernus, the uppermost layer of the nine hells, which if you guys remember the first quote, that's kind of how it started, is that she spends her time in Avernus, the of the nine hells.
Yeah, with her concubines and destroying treasure and shit like that.
Yeah, exactly. Destroying treasure for fun.
Yeah.
What an evil woman.
Powerful people would never waste money like that, would they?
Right?
They wouldn't do that, would they, Ethan?
Never.
Nope.
That would be anti-capitalist. That'd be downright un-American. I got another quote for you guys before we head into the break here. This one's from Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. The Queen of Dragons resides in Avernus. Her lair sits atop a towering mountain with flights of dragons wheeling through the skies to discourage any demonic incursion. For their part, the demons avoid this place. The hordes of the Abyss have learned the hard way that Tiamat and her court prefer to be left alone. She appears disinterested in becoming involved in the Blood War. Tiamat's presence in Avernus has confounded sages for years. As with devils, she is unable to leave the plane of her own will. She must be called forth, but only the mightiest rituals can draw her back into the world. So, if she has been imprisoned here, how and why did that come about? The most prevalent theory holds that her confinement is related to the end of the long war between the dragons and giants, that she was sequestered here by means of a mighty curse levied by a forgotten god of the giants she slew. The curse brought an end to the war, but also drew the curtain on the time of the dragons and giants on the material plane, clearing way for the rise of humans, orcs, dwarves, elves, and other folk. If Tiamat were to return to the material world, that event could trigger or be a signal of the resumption of the war between giants and dragons.
It's just that they lured her with a shout to Dragon's Reach and caught all five heads in those machines. Yeah.
They'd have five of them, yeah.
The perfect stocks.
Yeah. Now, essentially, she like strikes a death blow against a giant god, and the giant god curses her with his last breath to be confined to Avernus. She can only come via a powerful summoning ritual. So with Tiamat's imprisonment, the thousand-year war ends, but as the world settles into the time of dragons, already the Dragonfall War approaches. More on that, though, after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The time of dragons was marked by fledgling mortal races cowering beneath ancient lizards of near godlike power, constantly battling in the skies above while tightening a firm grip on the continent, making subservient all the lesser races. With the giant empire turning to dust, dragons were now atop the food chain.
Okay.
Welcome back from the break, everybody. We're telling the story of Tiamat. I was kind of talking to Pete while we were on our break, and I was vocalizing the thought that we haven't really talked about Tiamat all that much. We're kind of doing the history of dragons, so just to square where we are with our five-headed Yas Queen. She was born somehow. We're not entirely sure how.
Is Tia Tequila related to Tia Mott?
Yeah. what was her show on MTV? Finding Love with Tia Tequila? Or?
I forget, man. It was all
with Tia Mott Tequila.
Oh.
very good.
Just like the same five spray tan little heads all on.
Brett Love standing next to her for whatever reason.
If she was Bahama, it would just be all bronze heads,
Baja Blast Month, am I right? So Tiamat was born somehow, got involved in the giant war, killed a giant god, was cursed to hell forever. That's all we've kind of said about Tiamat so far.
She's in the upper layer. She's fiddling around. She's got her multicolored sex slaves, basically like a queen bee. She really is the ultimate girl boss.
And the dragons were created whenever Azagarath, I think, or gave the big hug to the crystal sun, but the crystal sun exploded, making her blood rain down onto a planet, which made all of the metal, the red dragons.
Yeah.
And then one of those red dragons went and like, yo, I could pull the Jesus move too and be a sacrifice. And he cut himself. And then that's where all the color dragons come from. And then
he cut himself. I think you have misinterpreted the New Testament.
No, I'm pretty sure he kind of put himself in that situation.
He had to know it was coming, right? He's truly the Son of God. He had to know it was coming.
Yeah.
Exactly. Could Jesus plan a betrayal so treacherous that even he didn't see it coming, right?
$30 worth of silver to Judas. He's just like, fuck.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the most interesting creation myth to me. That's the one that I completely clicked with too, Jamie. So I'm not surprised that's one you clicked with too.
Yep.
So yeah, now we're in the time of dragons. The time of giants is gone. We're in the time of dragons, where while giants and dragons were essentially pretty like diminished, wiped out, whatever. It takes a lot less dragons to rule, right? Because again, giants had cities, they had civilizations. Dragons just kind of like live like tigers, where they just have like a huge swath of jungle that they kind of rule over, right?
They eat other deer with those like big teeth.
Yeah, exactly. Dragons all have stripes. We can't see them because we're the dragon's prey. That's the thing.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
I just remembered I had a dream this morning that we were all on a walk together with my dog and there was like a big snowbank and we got too close to it and a panther jumped out and ran away from under the snowbank. And we were like, was that a fucking panther? Yeah.
Panther, bro?
Yeah.
You need to get a cat, Jamie. You're dreaming about it now.
Apparently.
Really manifesting, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the dragons are sort of not necessarily ruling over the lesser races, just like making things uncomfortable for the lesser races, I guess, is probably more accurate, where like particularly the evil dragons are like evil, but even like having the cool dragons around, you know, the cool dragons, TM dragons around is probably still uncomfortable for a lot of like proto races. But they weren't entirely helpless. So elves obviously go back a long time, and the elves in particular were hatching a plan to deal with the dragons. The elves had noticed that every so often, all the dragons in the world would go berserk and lose all semblance of self-control, often turning on one another and just kind of descending into madness.
Is this a blood moon or something?
Oh, man, Jamie, out of nowhere. Calling it. For fuck's sake, dude. Did you read my script? Is this the Dragons of, I don't even remember what source this is from.
This is
Dragons of Faerun by Eric Boyd and Aiden Bernstein. Did you read that in your own time?
It's a Terraria mechanic. But I've also heard of blood moons with dragons before somewhere. It might have actually been written into Malazan in some sneaky way, and I just stole it.
This blood moon has a cooler name than blood moon. But okay. So it turns out this behavior is tied to a red comet. Not a moon, which would periodically pass near Aber Toril, right? This comet, which came to be called the King Killer Star,
cool, like I said,
much much cooler name, would be the key in loosening the dragon's control on the continent.
That's good. So cool. What do we have? We have like Angela's Comet or something.
Haley's,
yeah.
Angela's
Comet. Angela Merkel's Comet. Let's start a petition renaming Haley's Comet after Angela Merkel.
That's boring as hell. You can have King Killer Comet.
We've got Angela's comet, and then we've also got like Shoemaker Levy, which I think crashed into Jupiter. So some of them are cool.
Yeah, there's like a belt up there and like a couple spoons and some shit. Like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, I mean, every rock in the Kuiper Belt is named after a different white lady. So you've got Haley, Angela, you know. Yeah.
You don't fuck with the Karen Comet, okay?
No.
Yeah.
Everyone goes mad on a Susan Moon.
So the elves kind of saw this behavior of the King Killer Star anytime it showed up that the dragons would go mad. They were developed, the high mages of them developed something called the Draco Rage Mythal. So Mythal in Dungeons and Dragons, and I did not look up Mythal.
They just can't say Mythal.
Yeah, the Mythal.
The Draco Rage Mythal.
The Draco Rage Mythal.
When you say the young races, you mean they're all like seven and they still talk like that, right?
Yeah,
like
and then
there was a king killer star that came in the sky and it made all the dragons very mad.
I've been playing Spyro speaking of dragons, and there's a level with Hansel and Gretel and they just speak straight up Umu voice.
How fun. Ahead of its time. So they created the Draco Rage Mythal. Mythal spelled M-Y-T-H-A-L. Mythals, okay, I know, are crystals of immense power. I did not look up the Mythal specifically, because a D&D campaign I'm playing in right now, Infernal Machine Rebuild, heavily features a Mythal. And I came across this, I was like, oh, fuck, I don't want to spoil that for myself. So I was like, I'm not clicking on the page, basically. No, it's a magic rock. So I do have a drink today. So I will take a little sip.
Oh, I'm left out, man.
You fool. We just got back from break.
I'm going to run and get one.
This guy. Okay. We just got back from break.
I'm listening.
So the Draco Rage Mythal encompasses all of Faerun and at activation at will can drive all the dragons to madness, can basically take away their self-control.
Okay.
So with the minor disruption of madness to all dragons and an ever-present tool in the tool belt of the elves, they're able to kind of disrupt draconic control over Faerun and set up their own civilizations.
If they're setting it up and like kind of ruling over, do you think they have like an out of office message? Because you can predict this, right? Like the cycles of the comet at some point. Yeah. Do they have like an out of office? Just like I am away for further instruction. Contact this person. Yeah. I have gone berserk and am currently running whatever. I'm destroying a city.
I'm OOL out of lair with temporary insanity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Any questions? Please contact my assistant manager.
Yeah, I'll be chained to the mast for the next few hours.
Yeah. If my strap of leather falls out of my mouth, please put it back between my teeth.
brief aside about out of offices. Everyone is too stupid to recognize an out of office, and every time I set one, I come back to 35 messages of like, "Are you here?"
That's just people you work with, man.
They're completely pointless. Yeah,
people I work with get it. People I work with outside of my company, outside of my org, get it.
Most people do. Yeah, I have mixed results.
Everyone who works at Technicolor is an idiot, Peter.
Well, thank God I don't.
I find the like some of the people who don't need to use emails and Teams as much for their job have a hard time with it. But yeah. Anyways, that's not interesting or fun.
Yeah, so we got a team of elves who've created this magic rock, which drives
you
insane. So basically, every time Jamie's taking his Miller High Life drink now.
Yeah, he's late.
Every time dragons start to get uppity again, someone goes out to the Draco Rage Mythal lighthouse, you know, turns on the light. Flicks on the neon, kicking off a new Rage of Dragons, capital R, capital D. That's what it's called, whenever this thing's turned off, or when the King Killer Star shows up. Tiamat, during this time, and this is where it starts to get a little muddy. During this time, curse to hell, right? Yeah. Not exactly gone from the world either, though. As the time of the King Killer Star wears on, there's an ever increasing number of holy wars between dragons, the dragons of Faerun. The worship of the draconic gods, Tiamat being a draconic god, was at an all-time high, and many conflicts arose between differently aligned worshippers of the same god. So, Jamie, do you remember Null? The
god of death.
According to one creation myth, sibling to Tiamat and Bahamut, kind of the neutral. Null was the god of death and undeath. With two aspects.
What?
The great equalizer. Well, that's what we talked about before. It's the boatman and also the guy delivering bodies to the boat, right?
It's the racket.
They called the reaver and the guardian of the lost.
Okay.
As guardian of the lost, his job was to shepherd dead dragons to the afterlife, protecting them along the way. As the reaver, he was a malicious beast prone to killing those dragons he would then have to ferry.
Right.
So many metallic dragons worship him as the guardian, while many chromatic dragons worship him as the reaver. If you guys have ever seen a religion, you know that probably worshiping the same god in two different ways is not going to go over very well, right?
Yeah.
So just a lot of holy wars kicked off in this time.
Damn.
Yeah, a lot of crusades, a lot of jihads.
Quick comment as well on Chris DeBerg. Everybody knows Spanish Train. Don't Quick pay the
comment
ferryman.
On Krista Berg. Wow, sorry, I did not think that that's where you're going with that sentence.
I have a Krista Berg CD in with no case in my desk. It's just scratched to shit.
Everybody knows Spanish Train. Don't pay the ferryman is a better bop. So that's why I was thinking about when you would mention the ferryman of the dead.
When I fun podcast fact, when I first got, remember what we used to record on, that old thing with the handle on it?
Yeah.
When my dad first brought that out to me for the podcast, it had a Krista Berg CD in it. Nice. So we record from some of the first episodes with the Krista Berg CD in the thing we were recording.
The dummy plug was a Krista Berg CD.
Yeah.
How we used to record was insane, dude.
I still have the wires. It was crazy. And it would
plug
in and out.
Do this week is to move the wires from 2017 off your floor.
No, I pick them up and rake the leaves out every once in a while.
That's bonus content though. If you guys want to hear more about JB's fucking rat nest of wires underneath his broken kitchen table that his laptop is currently propped up on, I'm gonna guess a shoebox on top
pile
of
books.
No, it's actually a pretty funny box. Wait, hold on.
No, this is Patreon content. If the listeners want
it's a terrarium.
What?
What is this? Is that glass terrarium still in that box?
I have not opened it. It's a Christmas present. I'm waiting for a good time.
I knew it. I knew it. That's gonna be one of your weekly chores: is opening a Christmas present.
From April.
Not even this year. Okay.
Cool. It's like 2019, 2018, I think. 2018, because I didn't go to 2019.
You have a 4-year-old glass beaker terrarium that you keep your laptop on.
Guys, we got to stop. This is paid content that we're giving
it's
to the free listeners.
Yeah,
okay?
Sorry.
It's a chemistry terrarium kit, lab flask for a mini garden. And apparently, I can grow a cactus in there.
If you're interested in hearing more about Jamie's tabletop terrarium and the cactus that he's going to grow,
the barbarism
one of these
that
days,
he allows to rule his life.
Subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. That's where you
I'm
can
all
get
about
30,
over four,
30
maybe.
To 60 minutes a week of these kind of bullshit conversations.
Yeah. Sorry, our bad.
I'm kind of half tempted. It's Saturday and I'm like, I'm a cocktail in. I'm half tempted to do another bonus episode right after this one ends, right after this main line ends, so we can just get this out.
Do it.
I think we should. I've got beer in the fridge.
Okay, so we've got Null, the Reaver, Guardian of the Lost. There's Holy Wars being fought after him. Holy Wars in general amongst all dragons, not just Null, but amongst all dragons are kind of like kicking off in a big way. So again, we're in the time of dragons. Before the break, I teased something called the Dragonfall Wars. I got another quote for you guys from the Draconomicon. The most far-reaching holy war, however, one that included dragons of every species and even some other Draco forms, revolved around the true nature and alignment of Asgarath, the World Shaper. Each dragon, of course, believed that Asgarath was the pinnacle of its own race and that the god shared its alignment. While Silvers, for example, could grudgingly accept the gold's contention that Asgarath was lawful good, neither could tolerate the red's belief that Asgarath was chaotic evil, right? Warfare tore through the ranks of dragonkind and at one time was violent enough to significantly deplete the Toril dragon population and actually threaten extinction unless something changed. So war's coming, essentially, because chaotic evil red dragons are like, God was probably like me. And lawful good gold dragons were like, God was probably like me.
If they were created when the crystal sun exploded and they were created from the blood of a god, that is, the explosion is pretty chaotic, so they are onto something, were that creation myth true.
It is a chaotic evil move to hug and kill yourself with the sun, I feel like.
I think, is it?
There was several creation myths, and I actually think this is a great point of saying, like, the gold dragons probably don't believe that creation myth, because it involved Bahamut being the renegade dragon, cutting himself and creating the metallic dragons,
right?
Which I don't think that they would believe. Whereas a chaotic good dragon, something like a bronze or a brass dragon, might actually believe that. Might actually be like, oh yeah, maybe you know, the renegade did that, and like
he had it made.
The nature was still in Asgarath, and he still represents me. But probably gold dragons probably believe a different creation myth, right?
Yeah,
true.
I think actually, most dragons, for what it's worth, believe the boring one that I said to disregard, the Tiamat and Bahamut just coalesce from the primordial forces of the universe at the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Because that's from specifically the like the dragon poems, like the poems that dragons wrote of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
You know? I think like most people with faith like believe the regular boring stuff, and then you get into the like the I guess the red dragons are like the Mormons, where like no, Jesus is an alien and the Garden of Eden is in Missouri. Like yeah. that's where that's like you get the crazy shit thrown in there, right? All the new stuff.
This gold dragon scale plate fell from the sky and told me so.
Yeah, exactly. Joseph Smith, the dragon.
Yeah, yeah.
I know so little about religion, I realize when you guys start talking about it.
You know a lot about Twitch though, dude, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's so true. What am I doing with my time?
Oh, what's my God. The Mormon meta on Twitch yeah. right now?
Yeah, well, the Pentecostals are taking off on Twitch right now.
Okay, so these skirmishes are kind of kicking off. While small skirmishes are taking place, Tiamat is again trapped in Avernus. Doesn't dissuade her from getting some of that action, getting some of that you know bloody noses to the metallic dragons. The Dragonfall War in True begins when one of Tiamat's generals, a worm known as Nagamat, was slain by the followers of Bahamut. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Are green. Worms different than dragons? Do they have wings?
Yeah.
Or is it still just slang?
It's slang. Okay. They're dragons. It's particularly the early texts refer to worms a lot. And like the worm consorts of Tiamat, essentially. But yeah. a worm and dragon is interchangeable.
And I know Naga. Who are the bad guys in Rikki Tikki Tavi, those two cobras? It's like
I don't know what Rikki Tikki Tavi was.
Naga are
Naga are like snake like
water.
People.
Yeah, water snake. People?
Yeah, I know. But not Naga is also like water, it's like a cobra.
In WoW, they're water, I know that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I get that from
cobra.
Naga from the original Sanskrit are a divine or semi-divine race of half human, half serpent beings.
There we go.
That reside in the netherworld and can occasionally take a human or part human form.
Wow. There's a fine
Hindu,
line
Buddhism,
between
Jainism.
A Naga and a dragonborn, I guess.
It's the legs.
It's the legs. Yeah.
That's all it is.
The lines of the legs.
Yeah. I wonder if like a Naga and a dragonborn got together, if they would have like half dragons, half human babies. Yeah.
Or, like three limbs? Like
no,
two
like,
arms,
like
1 foot?
No, I mean like separated, just some are dragons and some are babies. It just combined back in the right way.
Well, it's like if a horse and a centaur and a person or whatever. Horse and a guy are just siblings.
Yeah, exactly.
So Tiamat, her dragon general gets slain by the followers of Bahamut. She doesn't particularly like this and has a trick up her sleeve. So this is a quote from the Monster Manual version 4.
Okay.
The deity Tiamat, creator of evil dragonkind, has long sought domination of the world for herself and her progeny. For eons, she has struggled against Bahamut, the king of good dragons, in a conflict called the Dragonfall War. And most believe that this battle would last for millennia to come. Recently, however, Tiamat unveiled her latest and most terrifying tactic. She created diverse and numerous creatures with the blood of chromatic dragons and sent these spawn to spread destruction and evil.
Oh,
this
no.
incursion of evil dragon blood creatures threatens the balance of the war and, by extension, the world. To thwart her ambitions, Bahamut created the noble dragonborn, but the challenge of fighting evil dragonkind demands even more heroes than the platinum dragon can produce.
Dude, we hit terrible diversity twice in 3 episodes.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Jordan Peterson's going to have a fucking stroke when Tiamat invents diversity.
Yeah.
Hey, and yeah, Tiamat invents diversity, I guess, and then Bahamut invents eugenics to create the perfect and pure dragon.
Which way, Western Wait. Man?
Yeah, who's good again? This is all getting confusing.
this was written in the 80s, so, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Take it all with a big grain of salt on the morality front. So I posted a picture for you guys of what the spawn of Tiamat look like. They're dragon humanoids, just like kind of twisted abominations, sort of. Bahamut.
The blue one looks ridiculous. His head is gigantic. And then the bottom one just looks like kind of like a Spawn character, I guess. The big teeth.
Do you remember that show, like Street Sharks or some shit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She did create Street Sharks. Yeah,
the top
absolutely.
Guy kind of looks a bit like a Street Shark.
Yeah.
That's cool.
He's got like an arm that's like calcified bone with like like tentacles, like petrified tentacles at one end and like eyes on it. And they're horrifying humanoid scaly people. And Bahamut in juxtaposition creates the Dragonborn race, which is a playable race in D&D. And this is like the canon creation of the Dragonborn is Bahamut's answer to these kind of things.
Okay. Yeah. He's just like, aha, I see your street sharks and I raise you one SWAT cats.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Cool.
There's like I'm blanking on the name, but it was like a side scrolling beat 'em up on Sega Genesis where you could like play as like a guy with an axe and just like the dragon type people that you fought look so much like that talk character.
Was it Altered Beast?
Not Altered Beast. I can't find the... I'm like, I wanted to call it a single thing like Gauntlet or something like that, but I know it's not Gauntlet. But anyways, I'll find it eventually, and then I'll just yell and interrupt Ethan while he's making a point.
Hey, that's what the people come here for, Jamie interrupting, not for Ethan's stupid D&D lore.
It's a combo.
The timeline gets weird here. I kind of mentioned it earlier, but this is where it gets particularly messy. Is I think at the original publishing, when all this stuff of like the Dragonfall War and the Kingkiller Star was being talked about, like I don't think anybody considered Tiamat being banished to hell. That happened later, as near as I can tell.
Okay.
In like the 2010s, Tiamat being banished and confined to hell seemed to have happened. I didn't look down. I didn't try and find the first reference of each or whatever. So I don't know. I'm happy to say Lore Boys canon. Spawns of Tiamat. These creatures you see are twisted by the energies of hell, the energies of Avernus to create the abominations that we see.
Okay.
And that Tiamat throughout the Dragonfall War is not actually manifesting on the material plane, but is stuck in hell. That's why she sent her general. That's why she's sending these abominations rather than showing up herself. Because again, if you guys will remember, it requires a complex and lengthy ritual to summon her back to the material plane.
Pretty damn cool weapon that they have, though. It looks like they have like old dragon skulls on their left arms.
Yeah, he's got a spiky, like a dragon. Dragon didn't fuck a donkey, but fucked a porcupine.
And yeah,
that thing's skull. Skull is his fucking.
His shield slash also weapon on his left hand, and then has like a kind of like a bony staff type thing in the other hand, and then one guy has a sword. It reminds me of what's his name, Oakenfist or whatever in The Hobbit, where he has
Thorin Oakenshield. Thorin. Yeah.
Oakenshield, where he has the tree on his arm. Well, this guy's the dragon on his arm, and fucking sick.
Yeah, it's dragon bone weapons, right?
Yeah, very cool.
So the spawn of Tiamat are particularly effective in battle. They're stronger than the average bear, but also seem to have at least some capacity for hiding their disfigurements. Over the years, they're able to operate successful campaigns of subterfuge.
Hide their disfigurements. Like, you got this like twisted dragon man. He's got sunglasses on to hide the bruise on his eyes.
he's got like the like no lens glasses with like the fake nose and the mustache sitting on top of his snout. You know?
Oh, the Marx Brothers thing, right?
They infiltrate various organizations throughout the years. Throughout the 30,000 year war, that is the Dragonfall Wars, Tiamat is referenced a lot. Though Volo's guide places her in Avernus, she's far from absent on a lot of battlefields. Like I said before, she can be summoned via a complex ritual. However, both her and Bahamut had been gaining a lot of worshippers among mortals at the time. So they gained enough followers that each of them had essentially gained divine status and became powerful enough to manifest as gods.
I remember what you said before. We're coming up on the creation of Dragonborn, aren't we?
We already said that. We got there a second.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Bahamut created them in response to Tiamat's spawn of Tiamat.
Oh, okay.
Created the pure Dragonborn. Just as you make people, I can make people too.
Okay, good.
So they're gating gods, and to your point, like this may have happened before that. It's not exactly clear. I'm pulling from like four different texts at this point. So
yeah,
which about happened first? I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. it's all Lore Boys canon. You know, you peel back the skin on this one, peel back the layers on this onion. Turns out it's all Lore Boys canon at the core. So they gain enough mortal followers that they gain divine status. They join officially the ranks of like the big boy gods, not just the dragon gods.
Okay. They get their check mark on Twitter.
Yeah. They pay their $13 or whatever.
$8 in tithes. Yeah,
it's different now. Never mind. Yeah.
So the final battles between Tiamat and her spawn and Bahamut and his dragonborn are being fought amongst the Untheric Empire. So the Untheric Empire is this the mortal empire of people at the time. It's essentially like Sumer. Sumer was Gilgamesh, right?
Yeah.
So it's essentially like a parallel, like early humans, cradle of life sort of thing. Cool. Where these Tiamat and Bahamut have both kind of taken on like divine or deified roles in the pantheon of Unther, where they're not necessarily like, this isn't necessarily Tiamat, the five-headed dragon, but it's like Tiamat moonlighting as a god of Unther. Might be a dragon, might not be, but and it's those followers, the Untheric followers, who give them this kind of divine status. So with Loreboy's canon, she doesn't need to be summoned because she got the power of gods through worship, or her worshippers actually summoned her at various times when she shows up kind of in the canon.
Yeah, I mean, like, in a world of magic, faith can probably manifest itself as its own kind of magic. So
yeah, exactly.
Both, I guess, right? Yeah.
Faith kind of is magic, isn't it?
I believe
it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in our real non-D&D world, they're the same. They have the same amount of power. Yeah.
Yeah. they do. Yeah. Just by believing something, though, it'll change outcomes, man.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could dragon body. So I got a quote for you guys. This one is from Dragons of Faerun, which I suspect Jamie may have read, by Eric Boyd and Aiden.
I'm now sneakily reading ahead because I'm kind of insecure about how much I forget.
Yeah, Jamie's just reading all of the Dungeons and Dragons, Magic the Gathering, all the Elder Scrolls lore. Like, he's just pre-reading it all so that he can sound smart on these episodes, basically.
That's
fucking
right.
Cheater, dude.
As soon as I got my glasses, I had to live up to the part, I feel like.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
This is kind of the end of the Dragonfall War that this is gonna land in. The last great era of conflict between the Platinum Dragon and the Chromatic Dragon raged from 2087 BC to 1071 BC. During the first millennium of the Untheric Empire. So the end of the Dragonfall War is at the start of this Untheric Empire.
Okay.
Tiamat's cult was brought to Faerun, at least among humans, by the Mulan. The clergy of Enlil preached that Tiamat was the nemesis of the gods, and she was blamed by the god kings for every setback Unther experienced as it rose to greatness, then decayed over the centuries. Tiamat battled an Untheric alias of Bahamut, known as Marduk, the Justice Bringer, time and again, but neither
great
worm could prevail. Marduk?
No, Justice Bringer.
Justice Bringer. In 1071 BC, the Untheric Pantheon marched to war against the deities of the Orc Pantheon in a cataclysmic conflict that saw the death of many gods. During the final battle of the gods, Tiamat launched a surprise attack against Gilgiam while he battled Ilnaval. The ever-vigilant Marduk intervened, killing Tiamat before she could land a death blow against Gilgiam, but at the cost of his own life. So, I know on the break, Peter, you're complaining about the number of names, and I just hit you with a fucking fistful.
Marduk, the big dog, not quite Gilgamesh, where you're talking about ancient Sumer.
Gilgamesh, exactly. I buried the lead there, but don't worry about Ilnaval. Don't really worry about Gilgiam. Essentially, this ancient Sumerian civilization is being founded, is growing to prominence, and you have these moonlighting deities of Bahamut and Tiamat. Marduk and Tiamat, as far as I can tell, is just being Tiamat. Tiamat becomes the nemesis of the gods in the Untheric Pantheon and is just like, yeah, like, she sucks. She's all our woes. She's like all of our problems. So, like, the Gilgiam is the demigod king of Unther at the time. Like you said, likely a parallel to Gilgamesh, the Sumerian king from the epic poem, which shares his name. Well, the emperor of Unther manages to survive a surprise attack by Tiamat, Bahamut, as his avatar Marduk takes the opportunity to strike down the dragon queen, returning her to Avernus and him to whatever plane he is living on at the time. So they kill each other.
Okay.
And they both kind of lose their divine status because the cults of them, of their personality, take heavy losses enough that they lose enough followers. Tiamat and Bahamut both get stripped of their divine power, as too many of their mortal followers had died. Tiamat, no longer even a lesser deity, was reduced to a simple archfiend.
And because we brought it up a couple times on the subject of the Fertile Crescent, Marduk is the patron god of Babylon. Because I knew it sounded familiar. It's definitely come up like when we were talking about like ancient aliens and shit.
Yeah.
He is the king of kings, or the king of the gods.
I did not know that, Jamie.
Babylon.
I was letting Pete get one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I read ahead in the Mesopotamian scriptures. I was cheating reading the Mesopotamian scriptures while you were the monster manual. I was translating Sumerian.
I mean, pretty good deal for that guy who killed Tiamat. What was his name again?
Marduk?
Marduk, yeah, Marduk.
Well, it was Bahamut.
It was Bahamut, okay.
Marduk, Bahamut was his divine form was known as Marduk, like he was worshipped as Marduk, but it was Bahamut, and they killed each other. Him and Tiamat killed each other.
It was
a good deal for Gilgiam, who was a demigod and the king of Unther at the time, and who goes on to live a very long and very terrible life as a really shitty ruler, essentially. Great. And
so Bahamut and Tiamat basically wiped each other out. That proves that two heads may be better than one, but five heads is too many cooks. Right?
Five heads is equal to one. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you got too many cooks in the forehead, I think, is where you're going with this.
Two greater than one, five equal one.
Yes.
Two greater than five.
ChatGPT, one equals five. Code that in, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tiamat is given the role of Archfiend in Hell. Archfiend just being like the strongest devils.
Right.
Asmodeus, Lord of the Ninth, King of Hell, the God of Hell, decides to put the proper respect on Tiamat's name, gives her control of Avernus. There's nine layers to Hell. He says, you can have full control of this layer of Avernus. Not just control, also some responsibilities. Her job? Quell rebellion, essentially. So in researching her time here, I came across the candlekeep.com forum post, Questions for Ed Greenwood 2015, of which I read 21 pages, he explains that Tiamat was put in charge of the most lawless level of Hell's January 6th problem, where upstart devils cast out of the lower, more refined layers were constantly plotting coups against Asmodeus.
That's a great picture, Pete. You could just draw a demon dressed like that shaman guy in Hell. And with Tiamat in the back or something.
I completely missed that whole quote because I just saw a falcon fuck a bird up outside.
Hell yeah, oh man.
I did not pay attention to a word of that. I saw it like out of the corner of my eye. It's so sunny and nice. I was like, oh, what kind of bird is that? It's just like, because it's moving so fast, and God damn, dude. Okay.
I was distracted earlier because my dog was having a dream, and it looked like she needed help. But anyways.
Yeah. Watch nature take its course.
I saw a clip relating to the falcon thing. There's like an invasive bird species in some places where you're allowed to hunt them. And this guy has a falcon.
He sent that in his car.
And he throws it out the window while he's driving. And the falcon goes and fucks up the little starlings and then flies, kills the bird and then flies back into the car.
So, damn.
Dude, that's insane.
I would love a falcon. They remind me of cats. They're very cute.
Get one.
Yeah.
What's stopping you, coward? Join the local falconry chapter.
Oh, man.
I bet that's full of cool guys that you want to socialize with.
Yeah, exactly. Your one hobby already has special gloves, so you could get another special glove for your falcon. And
what? Oh, drawing.
Your one hobby of cock and ball torture involves.
Yeah. SpongeBob steps on my.
Oh, damn! That's more Patreon content. Okay.
Yeah, that's your self-proclaimed pervert glove you used to draw.
I know.
He has it on hand. Get it.
Okay. Tiamat's put in charge of the top layer of Hell, Avernus, and her job is, as devils are kicked out of the lower layers of Hell, she's supposed to stop them from staging coups in Avernus, essentially. Shutting it down. Unfortunately, she's like bad at her job, I guess. she's so bad at keeping devils from revolting that Asmodeus puts her on a pip. So canon
performance improvement plan for those who aren't brainwashed by offices yet.
so Ed Greenwood is the original creator of the Forgotten Realms setting, and when I say original, I mean he created it in the 70s and sold the setting to Gary Gygax's company for the D&D.
Okay.
So Forgotten Realms was created by Ed Greenwood, who ended up working for a lot of those companies and creating canon works or whatever, but he was also like very good at very recently, like in the last 10 years, like going on the Candlekeep forum and just like answering a bunch of questions that people have. People just like go there and like ask him questions about the current canon, and he just like comes up with canon on the spot kind of thing. He ended up working for Kobold Press for a long time, which was kind of partnered with D&D and produced a lot of canon stuff again. So the canon per him is that Tiamat was bad at her job, but Asmodeus reaches into her brain, realizes that while she did a bad job, it wasn't malicious. She was just legit bad at stopping revolts.
Untrained.
Good guy Asmodeus is like, okay, I'm not going to fire you. I'm just going to demote you, I guess. Or like, we're going to restructure. And he moves her to a different job, which is guarding. So she gets demoted from guarding the plane and shutting down rebellions to guarding the exit to Avernus and the entrance to Dis, the second layer. So okay. He basically says like, okay, don't worry about rebellions generally. We'll get somebody else to do that.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the queen of dragons, like you don't go and fire her. Like you find a place where she can work.
Right? It's exactly. Too much paperwork. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's literally like the most evil figure in the canon. Like he's the most lawful evil figure. Lawful is the is,
lawful
the
evil is bureaucracy, though. So like yeah. All this HR shit is absolutely lawful evil. Right? He's trying to protect hell from the employees.
Oh, can you imagine Tiamat the doing them?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, oh man, that in Hades, Zeus is, or not Zeus, Hades is always at the desk doing paperwork. And yeah, I yeah. guess real hell is just like that. There's a
also,
lot of
quick question, which he reaches into her brain, she has five heads. Is the brain of a five-headed dragon like in the chest?
No, it's like a brachiosaur, it's in the butt.
Oh.
Or brontosaur, which one has the butt brain? One of them has a butt brain.
It's the Porsche.
They're all very tall.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they all have butt brains.
Yeah, they based the Volkswagen Beetle off the Brachiosaur, actually. That's why the engine's so strong.
When you put the brain in the back, yeah, they get more weight in the back so they can go faster.
It's you more know? Like a Ford Pinto, where if you rear-end it, it just dies. And or explodes. So Tiamat spends her time in Avernus for another 2,500 years until some Untharite cultists manage to summon another aspect of Tiamat, known as the Dark Lady. Tiamat, as the Dark Lady, has a plan, too. She reaches out to a chosen of Mistra, the goddess of magic. It wants this chosen of Mistra is a very powerful wizard turned lich known as Samaster, and whispered to him about the promise of a little known artifact at the time called the Draker Rage Mythal. But we'll have to save the story of Samaster and the cult of the dragon for another time.
Very cool. Okay. I like this a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, in the canon again, like, usually campaigns take place around like 1500 DR. We're probably at about 1300-ish, 1370-ish DR. So pretty close to this is where Tiamat is in the current canon. I believe Zariel, the former archangel, is now in charge of Avernus, while Tiamat is still stuck there and guarding the gate to Dis. It is someone else who has the responsibility of quaying rebellions and fighting the blood war, which is another thing I mentioned offhand in this episode. We talked about it in our Oberyth's episode. It's where there's a
the kind of fish octopus guys, right?
Well, yeah, Jamie mentioned like, oh, you know, you this is your art, a demon, you doing this or whatever. These are not demons. We haven't talked about demons at all. We're talking about devils. There's a clear distinction between them.
Where
there's a scar on Avernus called the River Styx, which is a basically a portal to the abyss where demons are just kind of pouring through, where demons are chaotic evil, devils are very lawful evil, and they hate each other, and they're involved in a everlasting conflict known as the Blood War. We talked about that on our Oberyth episode. I think I promised maybe doing an episode specifically on the Blood War someday.
We can't all live up to our promises, man.
Exactly.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my next episode, I'd love to do Cult of the Dragon, which would maybe touch on that too, but who knows.
This got me in the mood to play tabletop RPG, which I think we're going to get to in a couple of weeks. So Ethan's hands. Yeah.
Yeah. Not D&D probably. I mean, I could do D&D if Bobby wants to do D&D.
I wanted to continue the ship because we already knew how to play our characters and stuff. But anyways, it's Bobby's birthday. And we'll
I mean, specifically why I'm moving away from that is because like you say you know how to play. I don't trust that you remember the rules from Christmas enough that I don't have to re-explain them all. And the new system, Scum and Villainy, which is based on Blades in the Dark, it's a Fortune of the Dark game, is way simpler, where all you're going to do is just tell me what you want to do, and the only thing you're ever going to roll is a d6. So that's all you're ever going to have to worry about is just like a regular die. It's much easier to play.
Because there's always going to be an hour of everyone reading their character sheets at the beginning, and
you won't have a character sheet, man. Like, you'll have 9 stats or 12 stats, I think, and that's it.
Okay.
That's all your character sheet's going to be, basically. And you're going to have one ability, so like it's going to be much more simpler.
Cool.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, everybody. This is has been The Lore Boy, the number one fake history podcast. thanks for listening. You guys tuning in, downloading every week really means the world to us. So consider telling a friend if you enjoy the show. Peter, is there anything going on in the Instagram world these days?
Yeah, I mean, steady as she goes. I think it's going well. I'm very happy with a lot of the art that's come out recently. I think I had some trouble there for a while being on time, but definitely have been very inspired. So yeah, at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. If you want to check out my comic publisher, at Squared Idea, there's a bunch of fan art that they're doing right now, just in the kind of interim between like book releases, basically. Yeah, and then theloreboys.com or Discord. Check us out. Yeah. I think all things are good. And yeah, if you share this with a friend, we'll hit our
good.
Cool.
So positive.
We're gonna hit our cool million like very Dude. Soon or possibly.
Hey, we've only been saying it for a year, guys.
Yeah, you're gonna ruin the burst when it actually happens by leading it up for 3 months.
What a lot of downloads, man.
It's cool. If you do want to, it's me, the Beatles. And if you want to meet the Beatles, come into the Discord. David is our new mod. Welcome to him. Go to discord.gg/loreboys, LOREBOYS. And there's an event coming up. Let me double check the event. If you want to come hang out with us, you just go to the Discord. April 8th at 7 p.m. EST, you can just go to the Discord server, and right at the top, it'll show you anytime there's an event. And David's putting some effort into making these happen. We have already like 20 people interested in this one, so it should be a fun one. Like, maybe we'll play some Jackbox if we have that kind of numbers. And usually it'll be more like in the handful, so it's not so overwhelming, but we'll see how it goes. The server is growing, and you can be a part of that. There's a ton of cool people, ton of cool channels. You can group up with people, you can just hang out, or you can just lurk and just do what you like. It's a good community.
Just freaking come and say hi, come and join us. You know, we're kicking off some pretty cool and pretty exciting wars over here.
We can guarantee that all of the Beatles are in the Discord server too. Just wanted to say that. All of them. Okay, so the holy
all
wars
most of them.
We're doing
a Patreon. If you guys want to support the show financially, do check out our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. We have a couple different tiers. You'll get all the bonus content that you could ever fucking stomach. I fucking bet you couldn't listen to all the bonus content we got on Patreon right now. It'd fucking make you sick.
Yeah.
do check it out.
You'll be like, what? A whole computer on top of a terrarium?
For 40 minutes, just us fucking arguing about fucking Jamie's fucking setup.
Hey, man.
Motherfucker bragging about how much he's putting to his fucking RRSP, still got his fucking computer propped up on a fucking terrarium.
Yeah, exactly. living like an actual pigeon, basically. Like a bed of straw.
I've been financially independent since 18 years old, and I think I carry some of those, like, being way too careful from my younger years into... My old year, so
we are kicking off some holy wars because we know you guys all worship us naturally, it's hard to worship, you know, a single god with so many different aspects. Mine, of course, being the you know, lawful good. Pete being lawful evil. Naturally, he's the bully of the podcast, as discussed before. And Jamie make completing the equilateral triangle by being just chaotic neutral and just being fully good and evil, but also just fucking crazy all the time. So I guess choose your deity. I'm not gonna lie, I feel kind of like the nerd of the group, and you know, I got my references included in my script in case anybody wants to read it. And
this is an MLA episode, don't you guys worry about it.
I mean, it shifts with the sands of time. I remember there was times when you were the like less nerdy and I was the more like, oh, come on guys, let's stay on track.
So choose your allegiance, because like it's gonna be fucking bloody. I guess so. Crunch at us.
Totally
And I guess that would cost you a lore.
Boys
out.
I really needed to go bathroom.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.